Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's guest is professional runner for Brooks, Jess McClain. Jess is a 2:22:43 marathoner. She's from Arizona, where she was a four-time Foot Locker qualifier and 14-time state champion while in high school. She went on to run for Stanford, where she was a seven-time All-American, and she signed a contract with Brooks right out of college. She took a little bit of a break after a couple years of professional running and focused on work. Jess currently works for the Love Up Foundation, which focuses on foster youth advocacy, and she's also the executive director and marketing consultant of her own business. Jess rediscovered running after the pandemic, after qualifying for the 2024 Olympic trials, where she placed fourth. She went on to sign another contract with Brooks, and most recently was the first American and seventh overall at 2025 Boston Marathon, and she also represented Team USA at the World Champs in Tokyo just a couple months ago, where she finished eighth overall. I hope you enjoy today's episode with Jess. All right. Hi, Jess. Welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast.
Oh, hi, Maddie. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you here. As I was telling you before we started recording, you've been a popular request, so I know there's going to be a lot of people excited to see you on.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I feel like I've, if you asked me to do this a few years ago, it would have been probably useless because I was not fueling well, as much as I probably am now. So I'm excited to chat. It'll be great.
Yes, me too. And I'm excited to hear more about that. But I would love to start by having you just tell us a little bit more about who you are and how you got into running.
Oh man, loaded question. I'm Jess. I am a professional runner for Brooks Running. Got into running probably around 12 years old. I ran the PE mile like everybody does in elementary school, and my PE coach, can't even remember her name, was like, hey, you should try out for the after-school track program. I was doing soccer, you know, full-time at that point, and then just on a whim went out to a few, like, after-school track practices and loved it. And I think back in, you know, those days, in that era, you kind of, like, ran with the boys a lot, and I loved that. Beat a bunch of them in practice and in some of the races. So I just loved running. I think there was a part of me in soccer, I was a midfielder, played the whole game, and I loved just like running up and down the field, loved just being in the whole game. And I think the part of running that I loved most about soccer was like, oh my gosh, wait, I can just like do this the whole time and like run with friends. And I loved it from so early on. But then I ended up getting pretty good, pretty fast, which sounds gross to say, but I think that was like a very interesting transition as a young kid because it's cool to find a passion and something that you're good at so young. But I think the pressure kind of caught up to me as a young kiddo pretty quick. So I just remember being so nervous for like my first few big track meets when I was like 13, 14, the first time I traveled out of state to race, and I was like a total wreck. so my like intro to running was young, and it evolved. Since then, I've run in high school at Xavier College Prep and went on to Stanford, and then actually signed my first pro contract with Brooks from 2015 to about 2018. Took a few years off, got married, hung with family. We all got through COVID somehow, got my first big marketing job, and then ended up getting back into running kind of in a funny way. So ran the marathon for fun and then got back with Brooks after the marathon trials last year. So it's been a really fun, rocky, just amazing journey, and I'm still on it. So.
I love that. And I relate so much to your story about kind of like starting out with soccer. Of course, a lot of runners I'm sure listening started out with soccer. I was, of course, outside mid because you have to run the most. And when you have that like running talent, I feel like the coaches recognize that. And they're like, you go out there, you can just keep running, run circles around everybody. I say this all the time, but like, yeah, I was probably terrible at actual soccer, but I could just get to the ball and like outrun people. So I can totally relate to that. And then it's so cool to hear that you've had so many different ways in which running has been there for you throughout your life, which that's something for me that I love about the sport is that it can change the way that you view running, the way that you, you know, how seriously you take it, how much effort you put into it. And there's always seasons of running, which I love to talk about. So I think that's such an incredible story. And what you said earlier about starting out having so much success immediately and immediately feeling that pressure is so true. How did you kind of navigate that early pressure? Where do you feel like that was coming from for you?
I think I'm wired in a way that like I always want the best out of myself and I'm not going to do something unless I'm super good at it, which when you're a kid just trying to like explore and experiment and play and figure things out, like that can be kind of tough because like I always remember like doing crafts with my friends and I just like wasn't as artistically great as them and I would just be like so mad at myself because I'm like, oh, mine looks so much worse than, you know, so-and-so's. Like I'm just somebody that I just want to be the best at what I'm doing at all times. I've worked through that. Like I'm a lot happier with where I'm at, with where my feet are, and progress in itself is really fun now. But I think at the time I was just so like just gifted in the running department. Like my parents lived on a golf course, which is like one of the most fun things to look back on in my childhood. And my parents would just be like, okay, run on the golf course. I had a few neighborhoods I could run in, but I just remember like having that autonomy as like a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old to just be like, oh my gosh, I get to go run wherever I want for 20 or 30 minutes. And at a young age, I was just like taught how to be in my head. I mean, back then we had like MP3 players. We didn't have iPhones. Right. Like, we had CDs, actually like CD players, like with headphones that you plug in. So it was such a different time where I was just like on the run in my head. Like you have an imagination when you're young and like you're, you know, you just kind of like think through your day and through life. And I feel like I was very fortunate to grow up in a time where running was like just a fun exploration type sport for me. And then I got into club track and ended up like running really well for like state championships, which was great. But I just remember like my mom having to talk me off a ledge before every race. And like, I'd be so nervous in the car and barely be able to eat. And I try to think back, like, why was I so nervous? And I honestly think it was more of a fear of like not winning than like being excited to try to win and like just do my best. Like I was like, what is the point of this if I'm not running, like winning every race? Like why am I doing this? Like let's move on. But then yeah, you just kind of evolve. Like you get coaches, you get people in your corner to kind of help strengthen your mental approach and tactics when you're young. But yeah, I think I kind of grew out of it, and then it reappears and like shows itself differently when you're like in high school, because then you're thinking about college, and then in college, you're thinking about NCAA championship titles and running pro, like potentially. So it's an evolution. But I'm excited to say, like, I'm finally at the point in my career where, like, I know how to channel the nerves. And, you know, I've run the last few major marathons and marathons where I, like, oh, there's certain things I wish I could have done a little bit better. Like, you know, but for the most part, I'm like, this is all a part of something, and we're going to figure out like what that next big moment's going to be in the next few years. So yeah, we're just taking it day by day, race by race.
Yeah, it's all part of the journey. And I relate so much to the nerves of sort of coming from like a fear-based spot in your brain, where it's like you're nervous because you're afraid of something going wrong or something not going the way that you want it to. And that's something I personally have really tried to work on, like throughout my running career, is trying not to approach a race from a like point of fear, but approach it from a point of like curiosity and excitement. Yeah. And I'm curious if that's something like you can relate to, if that's kind of how you flip the script for yourself too.
100%. And I think, like, I raced on the indoor track this year and I was so nervous, but I have a great coach and he's like, honestly, like, you haven't done this in 5 years. Last time you did this was pre-COVID. Like just be curious and be excited about it. So I've channeled that a lot, and I think I'm more nervous now, not because I'm like outcome oriented or afraid to fail. It's more like, okay, the marathon is so hard. Like, how is this story going to unfold? Decisions that you make in the early miles affect how you feel at the later miles. So it's more so just like the anticipatory, like curious nerve versus like, I'm so nervous to get on the starting line, which I've talked about a bit. Like my first go with Brooks was really hard, and racing was like really, really sucky for me. I was so mentally weak, and like there would be warm-ups where I'm like, I would do anything to get out of this race right now because I was just so scared. And I felt like my preparation wasn't great because my body was always in a deficit, always hurt. So I'm like, we don't want to go back to those days. We're going to live right. in the rather be curious and excited. So yeah, I definitely felt that in Tokyo. Tokyo was one of those races where I'm like, wow, there are so many elements and things that are going to affect like how this race unfolds. But it was definitely more of like a leaning into that versus like the, oh my God, we're scared, you know,
out of our minds. That's so cool. Yeah, exactly. Of course. And of course there's moments where it's scary, like it's a big deal, but there's also moments where it can be exciting. And yeah, very, very good way to phrase that for sure. And kind of going back to high school, Jess, a lot of times what I see as a dietitian and runners who are really like that outcome driven, like will do anything to succeed, there's often this struggle with fueling in the background where we're going to do anything we can to be good. And I think, you know, you and I are about the same age. Growing up in that era, there was a lot of, I think like diet culture is still around, like just from our parents and people around that age, coaches, I think we're kind of still learning about that stuff. So I'm curious, like, did you experience that or what was your experience like with nutrition at that age?
I've always had a healthy relationship with food. I've had moments where I, you know, notice things going on around me and it kind of freaked me out and maybe affected like a few ways that I approached or thought about fueling. But as a high schooler, I came from soccer. So like those teams were like, you love food. You do team dinners. You're on the road. You're just stuffing your face with like, back then it was crap. Like I am eating so much healthier now than I ate back then, you know, drive through Burger King. If I was going from one practice to another, you just like, my parents just figured out how to feed us. And did what they could that way. And we were always fed. But like, I had a coach in high school. His name's Jeff Messer. He coached Danny Jones back in high school. But he was so adamant on like post-run fueling, like have your chocolate milk, have something. Like if we're at the track, make sure if you're doubling, like doing the eight, coming back for something else, like you have food to snack on in between. So a lot of the messaging I was getting was like food is good. Food is fuel. But there was a point I do remember I raced in California against like Christine Babcock, Jordan Hissay, a few other girls at that time. And I just looked, it was the first time I looked at a starting line picture and I'm like, I just look like different, you know, like I was a soccer player. I was like a little bigger, like just, you know, like stronger, not stronger looking, but like when you're a soccer player, your body just looks different than like a distance runner. And it was kind of the first time in my mind where I was like, wow, I wonder why I look different, you know, than all those girls I raced against in the 3200 in Arcadia. And that was kind of like the first thought I ever remember like having where I was like, I wonder what I'm doing different. But I don't remember it like having a lasting effect. It was more so just like the first time I kind of let a thought like that creep in. But I would say college is more where I experienced, unfortunately, like my teammates around me when I was a freshman having some signs of like disordered eating patterns at preseason camp. And it honestly like really freaked me out. But I had the most awesome class of girls my freshman year, so it didn't necessarily affect me horribly. But I think because I did make the travel squad and then I was with, you know, a lot of the upperclassmen on racing trips and pre-race dinners on those trips, I noticed things for sure. But I've like always loved food. Like I created fake Instagrams, like the first food account I created and thought I'd be a food blogger like in college. Like I've just always loved food. Yeah. So I've luckily kind of evaded personally having issues, but I think it's more so like, man, I wish I could just help, you know? And I think the culture shifted. I think with Coach Milt eventually, like it was, fueling is good the minute you're getting in the weight room and, you know, the training room after practice, like get your muscle milk. It was an emphasis on fueling the body for sure. So it's like this, but I hope it's good now for kiddos in college, but it's so different with social media. Like you're just exposed to so many different messages and visuals and it can be really tough. Yeah.
For sure. And I think about that first experience you had thinking about comparing yourself to how other people looked on the start line and having that sort of like isolated incidents. Now, people have that daily when they have pictures being posted of other people. It's a constant reminder that if you look different, that it's obvious. It's always obvious more so to us than it is to anyone else looking at the picture. Like, we're going to be our harshest critic and always be picking those things apart. Yeah. But it's interesting thinking about how maybe back then we would have been confronted with that once or twice and had less, you know, more time in between. Whereas now it's a constant bombardment with those images.
And I think I've talked to my mom about this a few times, because like I noticed when I was younger, like high school and stuff, like, you know, you go into your mom's bathroom and you like steal lotions and makeup and stuff. And I would see like, you know, the pills that would be on TV, like lose weight in 10 days. And I feel so like, I feel like the messaging on TV to like our moms, like back when we were young, was so bad. Like I watched TV, not a ton, but like, I don't think I paid attention to like commercials and the messaging and the marketing so much, but I'm like, wow, it was, I mean, now you have Ozempic and you have a bunch of things, but like, it was just as tough then. And I feel like my mom and like my friends' moms all went through that. Like, you know, just like the body image messaging that's tough to just like not pay attention to. So yeah, it's just, gosh, it's just, come on, let's,
yeah.
After our bodies all look different. I still look at the starting line photos and I'm like, it's the healthiest I've ever felt in my entire life. I actually look back to the marathon trials photos and I'm like, wow, I look so much stronger now. And I'm fueling so much more than I was even then. And my body's just changed so much in the last few years, even to last year, just because of what I've been implementing and doing. But I look at it now and I'm like, wow, this body is going to get me to 2028, hopefully to 2032, if I want to go for another, you know, another 4 years after that. So yeah, I think I've just had a very positive mind shift and approach to it, you know, the last few years. But it's never like, you're never not working on it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think if there's any young runners listening, you know, just knowing that you're not alone and having those thoughts, and knowing that just because you have those thoughts doesn't mean you have to act on them. Like, we can have that sort of discomfort, which is just human nature, but we don't have to do anything about it. Because as I've said before, changing your body doesn't get rid of bad body image days. They're going to happen. So I'm curious if you have any kind of last words of advice on that topic for any maybe high school runners who are listening that might struggle with that.
Yeah, I think in college, it was the first time I noticed, like, my close group of friends, a lot of them were my bridesmaids, still my best friends. It was the first time I was like, wow, I feel so comfortable talking to like my teammates about like, oh, my period sucks this month, or like this and that, and I'm feeling this, or like thinking this, or I saw this and it made me kind of feel crappy. Like, I think it was the first time I felt comfortable like talking to my teammates. And now there's so, we had a few like female coaches, which was great. And now there's, you know, we could do so much better on that front. But more females are coaching and stepping into those positions, which is so important. But I honestly think like, it's okay to have those thoughts. We all do. Like, I'm 33 and I've been doing this for 20 years and they still creep in. But I think it's like, lean on your friends. If you feel like you're in a constant loop, like try to figure out how you can get out of that, like who you can talk to. There's so many resources, but just know that your body is like your biggest tool. And when you're my age, it's gonna be so important that it's healthy and it's like doing everything that it's supposed to every month and you're fueling it well, because eventually you will. And I just went through a funny, not funny, I got my eggs frozen a few weeks ago. And if you asked me like 15 years ago if I would have ever done that, it'd probably be like no. But eventually you'll start thinking about what your family's gonna look like. It looks different for everybody. But when you get to this point, like, you need your body to be healthy. And I learned a lot in the last few weeks about just what my baselines are, which I wish I knew earlier. But yeah, just fuel your body, lean on people that you trust. Talking about it is really healthy. And the minute you feel something that's off, whether it's physical or mental, like, just talk to somebody is my biggest piece of advice. You're not tough because you run through anything.
Yeah.
Don't ignore the warning signs.
That's such great advice. Just like not isolating yourself in those moments and recognizing that it's human and other people can relate to you and reaching out for help. I know that's an easier said than done, but it's definitely something that can give you a lot of relief just talking about those things. And like you said, you only get this one body, and it's so hard when you're a young teen athlete to think about your 30s. Like as a teenager, 30 seems like so old. You're like, ugh, whatever, that doesn't matter. But that is how it works. Like the body that you are treating that way at 16 will unfortunately pay the price at 30 or not, and you'll have a really healthy body. And if you want to start a family, you can. And those are all decisions that, you know, it's hard because at 16, like you're not thinking that way, but unfortunately decisions you make at that age do impact the body you have the rest of your life, which can be super hard. And yeah, for you, it sounds like high school, that wasn't so much where your mind was, but once you got to college, that was a bit more of a struggle. So yeah, tell us more about that transition for you from high school to collegiate running.
Yeah, so I think high school was such, I literally sometimes, the way I think about it in my head, I'm like, sometimes I felt like Hannah Montana. Like I had this like running persona and was big in, you know, on running in high school, like was in bed so early, had a curfew. My parents argued that it was later than it actually was, but it's freaking early. Never saw the end of a football game in high school. Like I was always for that. But then I had like my friends outside of running that were so fun. And I, you know, I went out on Saturday nights because we had the day off Sunday. So I kind of had this life where I had all my friends outside of running and academics. I kind of just, you know, got it done. It was fine. But I think with college, it was so much more running focused pretty early on. Like I knew I loved Stanford for its academics, obviously, but I think I just knew the running part of my student athlete identity was going to be like, it was going to take the lead a little bit more. And all my best friends were on the team. So everything was just kind of centralized around running, which was, I think, for me, great in college. But I do think a lot of that, you know, there was a lot of pressure that came with that, mostly all self-inflicted. When I look back at my Stanford career, it's like sad that I look back on it like, it was average. Like I never won an NCAA title. I think I made the podium once and it was my last year. I had a few Pac-10, Pac-12 titles, which was great. But yeah, it was a very formidable experience. I had three coaches, which was tough. Coach Milt like changed my life, honestly. I think if I hadn't have had him, I probably wouldn't have run after college. But yeah, I think Stanford was one of those experiences that was so unique. It's such a weird, fun school. I loved it so much. It was hard. Like it's such a hard school in many ways. But I think it was one of those points in life where I'm like, man, I wish I actually did a few things differently and carpe diem'd on a few things outside of running and athletics. But I loved Stanford. Some of my best friends came out of Stanford, had my favorite coach and 2 degrees. So I can't complain. And then, you know, I actually think my first stint as a pro was the hardest part of my career. Luckily at Stanford, I only got injured in a very minor way a few times. I think I had like a, not even a stress reaction in my shin. It was like a contusion. And then at one point I think freshman year, I did have a stress fracture because I kind of like killed myself to make the travel squad as a freshman, which don't recommend. You have 4 to 5 years, like take your time. But yeah, I think my first stint as a pro was probably my hardest part of my career to like look back on. And I'm still trying to like not digest it, but like figure out, you know, why I kind of let things go a certain way, and why I didn't listen to my body or advocate for it or myself. But no, Stanford, I loved. I look back and I'm like, oh, best time ever. Best college experience. I think for me, I wasn't going to be somebody that went to like a huge state school or a huge, it was just a very small, quirky group of nerds that were also pretty good at, you know, athletics. So it was just the perfect mix for me. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so great. And that's such a good point. Like your freshman year, it's such a big change in so many ways. You know, when you're in high school, you often do have friends outside of your sport just because you've gone to school with them from like elementary through high school, or you were involved in soccer with them. And so you have so many friends and such I would say such life balance that's just built into the way high school works.
Yeah.
Once you get to college as a collegiate runner, you're so right. It really becomes like you're there for running. Your friends are the team. Your days, your classes are structured around practice. And it's very much like school, running, sleep, and repeat. And like that's kind of your life. And it's hard too when you have that sort of tendency to put pressure on yourself. Obviously, academically, Stanford's a very academic school, but then also collegiately, it's a Power Five school. We were in the Pac-12 together, so I was racing with Stanford all the time. So I know it's a lot of pressure, and that was something you mentioned you felt like maybe got to you a little bit your freshman year. You tried a little bit too hard to see that immediate success, which I've talked about with other people. But can you speak to the importance of giving your body and giving yourself just some time to adjust to collegiate running without putting that pressure on yourself to see immediate success?
Yeah, I think to have a successful freshman year, it does not mean that you have to make the travel squad. Like, it can look so different for each athlete and each person. And I also think for me, I was playing the comparison game, like, in the classroom and, like, on the track. My friends were so smart. And I'm, like, you know, I'm smart. Like, I have my strengths. But, like, my friends were brilliant. And I think, you know, they were all doing certain majors, and I was like, okay, I'll give human biology a chance. And I like literally got straight C's and D's. I'm like, okay, oh, not for me. Best friends are like, you know, in the classes, maybe we like redirect and figure our life out. So I think for me, I was just kind of like following, like I was a follower a little bit. Like I was following the upperclassmen, trying to hang with them in workouts, like pushing myself too hard. And then academically, I was just like kind of glopping onto my friends, and like it was more important for me to like have friends in a pack doing something than like figuring out myself and like what my interests were and like what I wanted my next 4 years to focus on. So freshman year was a huge, point of growth for me. And I think it's just so important to be like, you need to give yourself pretty much half the school year to get adjusted. Like you're moving most oftentimes, like if you go in state, that's one part of the adjustment that might not be so hard, but like oftentimes you're going out of state, you're learning the dining hall, you have a class schedule you have to figure out, you have to balance like a new level of academics with a new level of, you know, athletics, which is tough. You likely are putting in like weight training to your schedule now. Most colleges have strength programs. Like so much is you're traveling if you make the squad, which is like awesome, but like such a tough, that was so hard for me to balance. I was so stressed missing classes, I was always behind. So there's pros to like not making the travel squad. You can ease into everything, just build a huge base for like track season or your sophomore year. You can always take a fifth year. I wish that was like, I know it's not like controversial. I know people think about fifth year certain things, but like it's such a positive thing to come back when you've got an extra year and you're so much older and more developed as an athlete and you understand your body more. So I just, my one like piece of advice to, you know, graduating seniors in high school, incoming freshmen, or freshmen in college, it's like, just take your time. Like, you're, so many things are being thrown at you. And it's going to take time to like adjust to each one of those new things and be excited about like all the progress you're going to make. Like, don't let that scare you. I think for me, I was like, oh my God, I just want to be like on the start line in the NCAA championship, like now. And I'm like, no, let's take our time to get there. And enjoy that process and enjoy like what college means, you know, like I think freshman year is your time to kind of like dabble and have fun, and it's okay to like make mistakes and do things that you didn't do in high school and now you're kind of an adult on your own. So I wish I was just kinder to myself, I think.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Be kind to yourself. Don't underestimate how much you're going through in terms of changes mentally and physically. It can be really challenging. And like you kind of alluded to earlier, potentially even being exposed to an environment where there's people struggling with their relationships with food, which can also make that transition really hard. Yeah, you mentioned struggling with that earlier. Tell us a little more about what you noticed in college when you were at Stanford.
Yeah, I just noticed some, like, we were fortunate enough to have a preseason camp, and I honestly think that's why I had, like, such a strong relationship with my running friends, is because I just came into Stanford with, like, a network so strongly developed. We had, like, 2 or 3 weeks that we spent together training. So, yeah, and they, you know, some of the freshmen, we were all split up. Some lived with certain upperclassmen, and I, you know, was with others, and it was just, like, I remember grocery shopping the first time was so stressful. Like, I remember, like, whole milk was, like, not something we were allowed to put in the cart. There were certain things that were, like, deemed bad. And I, like, at that point, I never thought food was bad. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to have a TCBY, like, yogurt parfait every night. Like, we're going to have one, two or some, we would do two nights a week, probably. Country. But, like, I never thought, like, oh, this is bad. So I think that the literal, like, negative valence of being attached to food was, like, such a shock for me. Like, oh my God, why is bread bad? Why is pizza bad? Like, why are we, like, budgeting how many times we should have certain things that, like, it was just so, such a shock to me. And of course we didn't have, like, sweets in the house. It was like, it was just, yeah, very interesting experience. And back then, like, you don't talk to your male coaches about that. Like, that's not something you're like, coach, like, I really want ice cream in my freezer back at the house. Like, you don't really talk about that. It was more of like, you know, whispers amongst the freshmen, and it'd be like, oh my God, like, your house has legit snacks. Like, we're coming over to hang out. But luckily, like, we get back to campus and, like, you know, create a freshman group chat immediately. And it's like, okay, my dorm, like, our dining hall has this flavor Froyo and mine has this. And then we'd all be like, depending on what dining hall Froyo flavor was the best. And our freshman class was so, had such a healthy, like, approach to food. Like, we were always planning, post long run brunches together. And, like, the minute we left practice, it was like, where are we going for dinner? I gravitated more towards the teammates that had a full plate of food and fueled themselves at races. I think races were really hard for me because I wasn't, like, with my closest friends on the team, that were in my class, and I was more with the upperclassmen. So I think race weekends, I just noticed, like, some of the girls wouldn't eat pasta, and I'm like, we're racing, like, a cross-country race, and we're not, like, I don't know. Like, I didn't not eat pasta. I just noticed things, and luckily didn't really adopt. Again, I just love food, so I was always having a full plate or two. So yeah, I think freshman year was a big wake up. And then I just remember being like, man, when I'm an upperclassman, I want to make sure, like, the freshmen are looking at me fueling and they're like, oh, Jess is, like, drinking a Muscle Milk right after practice. My best friend Tate, always had food. And I was like, oh my God, be like Tate. Like, I was so jealous. Tate always, like, made time to, like, somehow bike to Trader Joe's or the grocery store. Like, her dorm room was stacked with snacks all the time. And, yeah, I was just like, when I'm an upperclassman, I want to set a good example and, like, be somebody that people look at and they're like, okay, like, it's normal to eat when you're hungry and eat well and eat enough. So yeah, I just kind of, like, powered through those first few years, I think, and just kind of, like, put my blinders up a little bit.
Yeah, that's so hard to be confronted with that immediately. And this is, I would say, like, a fork in the road for a lot of, collegiate athletes that I work with as a dietitian, where they're confronted with that, like, oh, the people, the upperclassmen on the team who are really good athletes, really good runners, have all these food rules, have all these restrictions. That must be the way that I get better. And it's so cool that you and your freshman class were able in that moment to recognize, like, oh, this is not the way it's supposed to be, and change the environment of the team so that when you were the upperclassman, that was totally different. And that can change, like, that can leave such a legacy for a collegiate team to have a class like yours go through and just put value on taking care of your body and enjoying ice cream and Froyo and, like, making those things okay. I think that's what so many freshman athletes need. So I would say, if you're, you know, again, a collegiate runner listening to this, like, be the change that you want to see on the team, and don't just assume that the way somebody else is doing it is the way that you have to do it. If there's a red flag in the back of your mind, like, it sounds like for you, Jess, you had a lot of those little, like, red flag moments where you're like, this doesn't seem like this should be right. Like, listen, your gut knows, you know, deep down what's right for you and what's not. And trust that, you know, don't let other people tell you what you should be doing.
100%. And I think your body, like, no matter what you do freshman year, it's going to change. Like,
yes,
I was still developing. And then, like, it just, your training is different. Like, you're lifting weights, you're just doing more. And the food is probably different than what you were eating back home. Like, it takes a while for your body to, like, adjust to your home for the next 4 or 5 years that is college. So it's okay for your body to fluctuate. Like, I remember, like, definitely I gained some weight. Like I 100% did my freshman year. It's totally
Yep,
fine.
same.
Like I just did. I look back at photos and I'm like, okay, like I didn't really think about it then, but it's totally normal. Like it is okay. It's honestly like better to lean that way and have your body like have a little bit more there, honestly, than to underfuel. Just try to find the people that, like, when you're around them, notice how you think and how you talk to yourself and what they're talking about. And just try to find the teammates and the friends that, you know, talk to themselves well and have like positive outward thoughts about body. And it's okay to express to each other like tough moments. Like, that's the whole point of having girlfriends. Like, even now to this day, like, the first like few moments me and my girlfriends all get together, it's like, oh my God, my skin this month has been so bad. Or this. And then it's like, okay, you know, like we just hold it in and then we just feel safe because we can like unload on each other. And it's like, oh my God, my hair looks this and that, whatever. Yeah, just find the people that make you feel good. And then if you see people struggling on your team, like find a kind way to just check in and like reach out. Like, of course it doesn't feel good to be called out for something. So just find a kind way to just check in. Especially if you're an upperclassman, like just check in and pay attention to the freshmen and sophomores. And yeah, I think it goes a long way just to show a little love for sure.
I love that advice to surround yourself by people who, when you're around them, you notice thinking about your body or food in positive ways instead of negative ones. That goes for anyone who's a runner or not, any age. You know, I see this in like, yeah, like our parents' age, like some of the conversations I overhear in restaurants, I'm like, girl, what are we talking about over there? Can we not? Like, you know, just find those people that make you feel good and positive about yourself and stick with them. And I love your advice about reaching out. You know, I think it can be really intimidating to potentially approach someone who's struggling. You don't have to have the answers. You don't have to be the person that provides them help, but you can open up dialogue and make them feel less alone and maybe help them find the help that they need. You know, I think that's an important thing too, is like you don't have to know how to help, just reaching out can help more than you realize.
Totally, totally agree.
And so you had a fantastic career while you were at Stanford. You were an All-American 7 times, which is incredible. And you were able to sign a pro contract with Brooks right out of college. It sounds like that was a time that was a big struggle for you. So tell us more about that transition.
Yeah, I think with Brooks, yeah, I love the company. Like I still do. I'm obviously like still a Brooks athlete through and through. I think what happened was it was again a transition like college, like new state, new team. Except this time I was like joining a team where it was like comprised of the best 1500 and 5K, you know, runners in America. And I knew my strength was always more 10K, and I just saw myself running even longer than that. But honestly, didn't see another fit where that was a potential at all. I didn't think I was gonna strive in Michigan with the Hansons. Like there was just, I'm from Arizona. Like that was just not gonna happen. So with Brooks, I get to the team. Honestly, like the first few months are great. We had a really fun race in Hawaii as a team. That was kind of like the end of the season for most of the pros, and like a few of us new athletes came in as like a fun run. So we spent like a week on Maui as a team and hung out, which was like so fun. You know, I moved into an apartment, which was like scary to have like my own apartment alone. When you're used to college, like it's just different. And then the training, I think, was like so different all at once. Intensity increased, mileage increased. I was significantly like increasing my weights. Like I went from like just general strength at Stanford to like Olympic lifting. And then the fueling was interesting. I think I had a really healthy relationship with fueling in college, and then it became something that was seen as like a tool that could be really manipulated, kind of like tracked periodically. And then intermittent fasting became something that we experimented with, which was not good for me. One of my least favorite things is being hungry. Like I'm like constantly stressed about like not having enough food. Like even at my meetings, my work team jokes that like I'll leave like an hour in if it's going over, and I'll like excuse myself and go get a snack and bring it back. Like I need food all the time. So to go through something where I was intermittent fasting when I was running the most I've ever run and the highest intensity ever was just not healthy for me at all. So that's something I regret just like giving into, honestly. And then I was injured all the time. Like every 6 months, a few times a year I got hurt. I had to scratch from JDL Fast Track. That was like my first DNS, which sucked. And then I didn't make it to the start line of the 2016 trials, which really sucked. I scratched like after warming up, watched from the stands. So it was just like a constant cycle of injury. And I wasn't speaking up for myself or like saying like, hey, pump the brakes. Like I need to figure out what's going on. It was just a lot of the same, like, oh, well, cross train through and I have to maintain race weight, like while I'm cross training and while I'm hurt. And it's like, no, your body's hurt because it's probably in like an extreme deficit of some sort and it needs fuel to repair itself. Meanwhile, we're cross training like 2 to 3 hours on a freaking assault bike.
Assault bike? Oh my God.
Oh, it was miserable. Oh my God. I remember I'd like leave my car and walk in the rain in my boot, get on the assault bike for two.
Oh my gosh.
Walk back to my car and get soaked. Yeah, it was just a time in my life where honestly, it was so important for my personal growth because even my first marketing corporate job, I had some shitty managers and I'm like, nope, not doing this again. Like I see all the red flags because, and it was more so like personal red flags, like how I was feeling and how I just felt like super unfulfilled. And I'm like, it's manifesting in a different realm and a different job, but it's the same exact feeling like in here, like the same red flags. So everything I learned, like my first stint as a pro, I've been able to like grow from and apply. I'm mad that I let it last for like 3 years because those could have been some really cool 3 years. Like I think I could have run really well in like the half marathon on the roads. Like the few seasons I'd make it to the road season, I would thrive. Like I ran so well in New Haven in the 20K. Falmouth was awesome. But yeah, it was like just getting to that point was so hard for me because it's such a long year and I would just get hurt so many times. So I think my advice to people kind of feeling the same way is like, it sucks. It feels like it's quitting to be like, hey, this is not working. Hopefully you're with a team and a company and a coach or whoever that appreciates that you know your body like the most. And when you're speaking up, it's because there's like an engine light or like a warning flag going off that you're paying attention to. You are your own advocate. Like at the end of the day, everybody's like their own business. Like you are the athlete that's going to like get you to every starting line and finish line in your career. So it's like, what's going to make you, not just run your best, but like the happiest and the healthiest. And I just forgot that like, I just need to be happy and have fun to run. And I was just not setting myself up to like be happy and have fun. So I just needed to fully eject, and it totally sucked to have to do that. Because I loved my team, I loved Seattle, but I had to like figure my life out. Honestly, it was like one of those forks in the road that all late 20 somethings hit where you're like, what am I doing? Am I like, just come home? And like, I just totally like was taking an L. I was like, moving back home, didn't have a job. Moved in with my parents and they're asking when I'm coming home every night. I'm like, oh my God. Depressing. But it was so good for me. Like, I think it's okay to take a step back and like reroute. It's not like quitting and you're not a loser and it's okay. Like it happens to everyone. And some of the best things of my entire life happened, you know, in the year after that. So, the tough times suck, but they honestly like make the better times shinier and more fun. So
yeah. And it's so easy to sit here now and be like mad at yourself then, but it's such a hard position to be in because you're trusting this new environment and coach and team, and you're trusting that they have your best interests in mind. And it's easier to continue to trust it than it is to say something's not right. And so, of course, again, human nature, like we're going to try to make our situation work. And like you said, when athletes get frustrated about quitting, I'm like, look at how hard you tried to make this work. It's not quitting. It's making the decision that's right for you and having all those little red flags going up in the back of your mind and suffering through all the injuries. And, you know, obviously there's a relationship between some of the fueling things that were expected of you and the injury cycle that you found yourself in. And it's so demoralizing to be in that position and just want to be healthy and be running and see like a ghost of yourself that could be successful but isn't. And I think it takes so much strength to change your situation. And I really admire that you did that and that you share your story to hopefully help other athletes know that they have the same strength.
Yeah. And I kind of look at it too. Like I met my husband, Connor, and a few relationships that I had before that just felt so hard. Like you just think, oh, like the things in life that are the best, you have to work so hard for. Like, yes, your career and like whatever it is, you have to work hard, but like it shouldn't feel like this constant sacrifice of like what makes you you and like what brings you joy and what makes you happy. And like when we got married, I'm like, oh, this is pretty great. Like, honestly, yeah. The hardest times we've been through are like him starting his business a few years ago. And honestly, the last 2 weeks of my life have been a complete mess. But like, it should feel easy and like it should feel like the right fit. And it is okay to give something a go and like try to make it work. But it's also okay to be like, I love these people and I really love, but I like, I need to do what's best for me and this is not working. Like, that is okay. Yeah. And the same thing happened with my like first big corporate job. It started as a startup and we got acquired and I was like, oh, I'll just keep writing it out. It's a good paycheck. I get insurance. I get stock units now that vest every so-and-so months. I'm just going to keep staying through like the next vesting cycle. It's going to be fine. And I was so miserable. I ended up like DMing my current bosses, at the nonprofit that I work for now, like during my lunch break. And I'm like, I am so miserable. I will do marketing work for you for free. Just because I felt 0% fulfilled in my job, I was like, I need to do something that like is going to make a difference. And that, like just doing that, like opened my eyes to how fun a job could actually be. Like, yes, I took a pay cut going to the nonprofit sector, but like, because I did that, I feel so fulfilled at work. I was also able to start like a marketing consulting LLC on the side. So I do that. So a step back can like lead to multiple steps forward. So I would just listen to what like your internal, you know, radar is telling you and when it's going off.
Yeah. Someone once explained it to me as like, it's like a slingshot. You have to pull backward to spring forward. And that's going to look different for everybody. But I love that you kind of recognize that you took a step back, you know, you moved home, you ended up getting married, you worked some jobs, and then you found your way back to running, ironically for Brooks again. What was that like for you? How did you decide that you weren't done? And what made you decide to come back to running?
So I ran like pretty much 5 days a week through the pandemic the whole time, just to stay sane. And I love running. I always have. But then it's like, you do that so long. And then you're like, oh, I wonder what strides will feel like. And then you're like, I do love 400s. Like, let's try what a mini workout will feel like. And then it's like when you're a competitor, you can't just like do the least and be okay with that. Like, complacency has like never been something that I've loved. So I just, you know, started doing mini workouts on my own. And then I got married, and it was more so to be like, okay, I'm getting married. Like, I want to, you know, feel my best. So like running makes me feel my best. So I like ran more before my wedding and then went on my honeymoon, you know, had all the Mai Tais, went to Hawaii and then came back and I saw like, some ads for the Mesa Marathon a few days after my birthday. And I was turning 30 in February. And I was like, oh my God, it'd actually be so fun to like run a marathon for my 30th birthday. And that was like 6 weeks out. So I was like, yeah, we'll rip a marathon. We'll just train for it. We'll have fun. I did everything wrong. I like barely fueled for any of my runs. I think I brought two gels for the race and a banana. So I ate the banana on the bus, had a gel before the start line and had one gel for the whole race. Ooh. Had to buy racing shoes from Dick's the night before because my other ones didn't come in. Used the bathroom a few times during the race, but I ended up running, although Mesa is not a qualifying course, which I later found out on Twitter after I finished, you know, the race. I ran under the standard for the Olympic trials and I ran under my new married name. So I'm like, nobody's going to know from the start list that it's me. Like, I'm just going to do this for me and for fun. Yeah. My mom came out, my sister-in-law and her dad, which was like such a surprise and fun. And my good girlfriends that I've like reconnected with from home, we're all out there with like huge signs, like, and it was just so fun. Like, Connor rallied all my friends. It was really cute. And I had so much fun. Like, I did everything wrong, but I had so much fun. I think I made a playlist on my phone that was like 2 hours and 45 minutes or 50 minutes. And I was like, okay, if I like finish before the playlist ends, that's like a good day.
Wow.
But I won and I ran under the qualifying standard. And then I saw a tweet that was like, now McLean runs 236, but doesn't qualify for the trials because it's not a, you know, verified course. And I was like, damn it. I'm like, okay, fine. Let me go get the time. Like, I'm going to train for it. And then I just like, I got reinvigorated, synced up with a really good group of people, Rosie and Julia and some of my now like other best friends in the sport. And we just had a blast. And I trained for grandmas and ran 229 to actually qualify. So suck it, everybody. I'm going to do it. It just had so much fun, honestly. And then the trials was just like, nothing to lose. I'm like, this is such a good way to like go out. I honestly thought it was going to be like my last kind of race, and my entire family came out. Connor's entire family came out. And then the race was so fun that I was like, I can't imagine stopping. Like, this is the most fun I've had. This is the best my body has felt running this distance and like this pace. And I honestly didn't want or need a contract because I was like, brands are just going to tell me where to live and what to do. And I didn't want to do that. But Brooks was the first one to kind of reach out, and they were like, what's going to make you run your best? And that's the first time a company's ever asked me that. And I'm my own agent. I don't have one. So I made all my decisions, and it felt really good to do that. And Brooks was honestly like, it just felt super right. Like the minute they reached out, I visited the Hyperion House in Orlando, and that just felt really good. So yeah, it's very cool to be back.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I got chills hearing that story, and I love that you rediscovered it based on on your own terms, and because you love the sport and you got to maintain that, even getting a, you know, contract after finishing fourth at the Olympic trials in the marathon in 2024, which is amazing. You went on, you made the world team this year. You finished eighth at the world championships in the marathon. Just so many huge accomplishments. And earlier you alluded to figuring out fueling a little bit more. Can you speak to some of the changes that you've made with fueling and how you've learned how to fuel for the marathon itself?
Of course. Yeah. So I think one of the biggest things that I wasn't doing was like fueling on the run. I think that's like the most obvious place to start is I actually ended up getting a sacral stress fracture in 2022. I was supposed to run the marathon championships at CIM and got a sacral stress fracture like 10 days, but it was like my last long run. And that was like a sacrum stress fracture, or just a sacral issue in general, is like a sign that there is a deficiency going on, that fueling is probably the first place to look. After that, I was like, I'm going to do everything I can to like not, you're going to get hurt, you're going to have niggles, but like to not get this hurt again. So I really focused on body maintenance. I go to one of the best massage therapists. He does a lot more than just what you picture when you hear a massage therapist, but I go to him every week and have been for 2 years. And then fueling was something that I leaned a lot on my fellow really close friends who are also marathoners to figure out. And honestly, like leaving corporate was big for me because I was realizing that I was just running, going straight home, walking the dog, showering, like maybe eating a little tiny thing, getting to my desk, and having done all that by like 8:15 and still not having like eaten a full meal. So I wasn't thinking of my body when I was working full time. There's definitely ways to work full time and like fuel properly. I just was not doing it. So I just got to the point where I'm like, nope, we're gonna always have like something small in the morning before we run. And I have to force myself to eat because I wake up so early, but I'll have like toast with honey on it. I'll have a banana, something. But I'm always like, if it's a run over 10 miles, I'll have a gel. I'll shoot a gel right before. Long runs, obviously, I'm fueling a ton for breakfast. We do frozen waffles, my husband and I, because he's running too. So we'll put two frozen waffles in the toaster, put some peanut butter or honey on it, probably have a banana too. And then I'm fueling every 25 to 30 minutes on my long runs with a mix of gel and, you know, like some sort of like carbohydrate electrolyte mix. And then right after I finish running, I have a shake, And then I have a full meal, like, when I get home. So, and that's usually, like, eggs with toast and avocado, or, like, you know, breakfast sausage, or a really good breakfast sandwich, something super hearty. And then I, throughout the work week, it's, like, small snack before I run, have my shake, have breakfast before I go to work, and then I have snacks all day. I mostly work from home, like, 3 days a week, so I'm always snacking. But I'm more of like a big dinner kind of girl. So
yeah,
I'll have a bigger dinner, but like constantly snack throughout the day. But I think that's it. It's like, I don't let myself feel hungry like ever. And the minute I feel that coming on, I put something in my system. And then fueling on your runs. Like I just, if it's 10 miles or over, I'm always fueling while I run.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two huge important things for the marathon, of course, is eating enough and eating enough during your runs. And it sounds like you figured out both and are having some incredible success, which is so cool. And now training for 2028, you just recently shared on Instagram that you've gone through egg retrieval to freeze your eggs. This is something I haven't talked about on the podcast before, but I think for women around our age, it's such a tough decision in general because there's so many factors. And I think like what men don't understand is like, it's a big sacrifice physically and also with your life, and you can want to have kids, but also be scared of the sacrifices. And there's just so many things that go into that. So if you feel open to sharing a little bit, what made you decide to do this?
I would love to. So I've actually been really struggling with like this decision for like a few years. Like, honestly, I thought we were going to leave the marathon trials, and I'm like, I guess we'll have kids. Like, that's just like what you do. And then I literally felt a sense of panic when I was like, no, I want to keep running. And Connor's like, yeah, keep running. Like, why would you stop? So it's definitely like something I've been kind of like thinking through a lot, not on my own, but just, it's been more in my head. He's like, whenever you're ready, whatever, you know, whatever makes sense, it's fine. But I think I've just been struggling. Like, a lot of my friends have two kids. Some have three. I have a little niece, which is so fun. But like seeing my brother and, you know, my sister-in-law become parents has been like, and seeing your parents become grandparents, I'm like, oh my gosh, like that'd be cool. But I've just like in the back of my head, I'm like, I know I'm not ready to have kids. Like, I love our life now. I've worked so hard to like get my body to where it's like completely doing what I want it to do. I had so many years where it was like my biggest enemy, and I'm like, I love where I'm at now. And that's like not the reason I don't want to have kids. Like, it can sound kind of like icky to say that, but I just love how everything's going right now. And we're not ready. Like, he just started his own business. I'm working a ton and I love it. And running is something that's bringing me like so much joy. So I was just struggling, and a few of my friends have been going through like their own journeys, specifically with IVF for different reasons. And they've just been super open. And I knew how hard it was. So I think that's also why it was hard for me, was just like knowing what it entails. And everybody's different, you know. Essentially the process is you get, I highly recommend just getting a baseline. Like, if you're 26 and older, it's just good to check in, like get like a full blood panel done, just to understand like your just general baseline of reproductive health, like what's going on, just check in. I wish I did that honestly when I was like 28 or 30, just to know. And then the consultations take a lot, like finding the clinics to talk to. And then every consultation is virtual, which I was super annoyed by. And they're like $250 to $300. Yeah. And I was just like, that's a huge investment, like just vetting clinics to talk to. So we met with two or three, and there was one that I ended up really liking. And I had three friends that were also going there and just heard good things. So I think it's like, just talk to your friends and do all your vetting. And then essentially what the process is, just depending on your background, like if you're on birth control, like what your cycle looks like, all these different things, you're essentially monitored to pick a good time or an optimal time to do, you know, hormone injections. Mine lasted 11 days. I started 2 days after I got back from Tokyo. So I was so freaking tired. I was exhausted. I was jet lagged. Oh my God. It was the only time I could make it work. And I honestly was going to do it after New York, but I totally chickened out. So yeah, it was just the only time I could fit it in, and it worked out. So I started on a Saturday, got back on Wednesday night, started Saturday morning with injections. And those were fine. I think there's blanket statements like you cannot exercise when you're doing these, but like listen to your body. I ran for the first 5 days. I felt completely normal. The shots were really hard for me. I'm like fine with USADA taking my blood, but like injecting myself 2 or 3 times a day was tough. But you get over it. You kind of get immune to it and you realize like how strong you are. So yeah, I started to feel different like day 5 or 6, which basically just means you just feel your ovaries getting bigger. Yeah. And you really do not want to put yourself in any danger of like ovarian torsion. That's kind of like the biggest thing that you want to keep an eye on. So I just cut running completely out. I went on dog walks. So I haven't run since, it's been like 2 weeks since I've run. And I got my retrieval done last Wednesday, which like should have just been super easy. It should have just been like 2 or 3 days of feeling not great. But what happened with me is I had, you know, as runners, we have a lower BMI. I'm lucky in that I have a larger ovarian reserve, which is a good thing. That can put me at risk of OHSS, which is ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which I ended up getting. And it's like this thing like in the IVF, you know, just fertility world that people talk about like OHSS, like, oh my God, like I don't want to get it. How do I avoid it? I wish I asked more questions. Like, I think my biggest advice is like, ask what drugs you're being administered and why and what they do. Like I just have, you get this calendar and it tells you how much to inject, multiple times a day. And I just followed it. And I wish I asked more questions about the actual medications that I ended up administering to myself. Because what happened was the HCG shot that was a part of my trigger shot, the last shot that basically like gets everything ready to go for the retrieval, was not necessary for me to have at all. So I just wish I asked more questions. So that's like my biggest piece of advice. But my recovery was really rough. I gained about 16 to 18 pounds of fluid in my abdomen because my ovaries were leaking a ton of liquid into my abdomen and chest cavity after my egg retrieval. I had shortness of breath for like 5 days. I was on bed rest from like Thursday to Tuesday. Gosh. It was really bad. So yeah, if anybody ever wants to talk about it, I posted about it because I'm like, man, I wish more people talked about this because I think it's not necessarily an insurance policy. Like you're not, if you freeze your eggs, you're not guaranteed that your eggs are going to turn into embryos, but it gives you a lot of potential. And I think that's like kind of all I needed to feel very, I'm at peace. Like, I'm like, okay, I took action. I'm like doing what I can right now to family plan for the time that might feel right to talk about it, you know, after 2028. But yeah, I'm a total open book at this point in my career. And especially after the last 2 weeks with how many people were down here, I don't care anymore. So yeah, if anybody wants to talk about anything, you can reach out, but, it's a very cool thing that's available. I think it opens your eyes too to how humbling the IVF process is. I realized I could be a way better friend to my friends going through this process. I did it once, but I've had friends who have had to do like 3 or 4 egg retrievals. And it is a lot. So like, if you know you have friends that are going through this, like reach out because you feel so lonely. Like I had Connor here and like I had friends that checked in, but it is such a weird, it's your body and you're doing it and you're putting yourself through this. So it just feels very, it's hard. So yeah, open book, reach out, but I'm really glad I did it. So, even though I went through, you know, the last 10 days, I'm super happy I did it and it's all going to be great. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. And there's just so much that goes into that decision. And I think the more people like you that share their story just helps people know what to expect and maybe give them that kind of strength to take action and have that sense of peace of just knowing you did something, even if you don't feel ready now. It sucks, but there is a timeline that unfortunately we have to think about, which I hate that there is that pressure of the timeline. So like knowing your options and advocating for yourself is huge. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh yeah. And like, don't rush the process. Like I think 90 to 95% of people like go through, it's like a 10-day process of shots and then the egg retrieval super quick. So like, just let your body like do, this is a really hard thing. Don't like kind of, don't stress about running. Just try to time it up where like it's in between seasons or big races and you can just think about this and get through this. But yeah, no problem. I'm glad you asked.
Yes, Absolutely. Well, Jess, thank you so much for sharing your story. You have such an amazing, inspiring story. And I love hearing stories like yours where people just find running in new ways throughout their careers. And we're so excited just to have you represent U.S. distance running so well, and really excited for it. It was so fun to watch you in Tokyo. It was really just like cheering at the TV, and it was just so cool. So yes, thank you for sharing everything. And if you have time, I'd love to wrap up with our rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
Okay, awesome. The first one is, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
I think I'd have to go with frozen waffle. Yeah.
Perfect. Super easy. That's a good one.
But it's just like have them in the freezer and pop them in and you're eating on the go. It's easy.
Amazing. Yes. What would you pick for your last meal?
My answer has always been sushi or Asian food of some sort, but I think after being in Tokyo, it would have to be like an omakase coursed meal, because that gives you more time before you eventually pass on. And it's also delicious. So yeah, I would say like sushi, Japanese food, probably.
Amazing. Yum. What is your favorite dessert?
I'm a huge chocolate girl. Chocolate mousse is actually my favorite dessert, which I feel like is a weird rogue answer, but during marathon training, we always have pints of ice cream in the fridge. So I would say ice cream's our go-to when we're in the thick of training.
Yum. Amazing. What is your least favorite food?
Oh, least favorite. Honestly, I don't think I have like a least favorite.
Okay.
What do people usually say? I don't know.
It's been like random stuff. Like somebody didn't like chocolate. Somebody just like random stuff.
Yeah, man. Nothing.
It's okay if you don't have one.
I kind of eat everything. Yeah.
I'm amazing. That's a good trait to have. Yeah. This may have just happened for you, but if you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Japan was always on my list for sure.
Yeah, I figured.
Like 100%. Oh gosh. Like maybe to stick to like the Asian theme. I mean, I still want to travel like more in Japan. Honestly, I feel like I didn't have any ramen. It was so hot that didn't have like any hot food really. So maybe actually go back to Japan and have like really good ramen, udon, just try it all. Yeah. But I love Asian food.
100%. So good. That's top of my list is Japan. So yeah, I bet. What is your go-to lazy meal?
We're huge burger fans. Like honestly, we'll just grill up burgers. It's so easy. Just have your buns and your toppings and burgers, or we'll do like a chicken or a steak, and then I can usually throw a salad together really quick, and then some sort of like bread pasta on the side. It's usually like what we do. Yeah.
Easy. And last question, what is your go-to coffee or tea drink?
I'm a latte girl. I actually love making my own coffee, and I was so sad. I couldn't have coffee like for like 10 days, and I was literally like, but I make my own lattes at home. Right now I got the maple butter from Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Like a tablespoon of that. With a dash of sea salt, and then I'll pour my espresso shots and then kind of let that, all come together, and then pour my milk in. I'll either do it iced or but right now that's what I'm doing. Yeah. I'll usually do a latte.
Sounds so good.
Make it fun somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. Amazing. Well, where can people keep up with you if they want to find you?
Oh, I'm pretty much on Instagram, just at Jess. Yeah. Kept that maiden name somewhere, but I'm sometimes, but yeah.
Yes. Amazing. Well, thank you again for sharing your incredible story, and best of luck with everything moving forward.
Well, thanks, Maddie. I'm really stoked that you're doing this. I wish something like this was around when I was like earlier on in my career. Something that, when I was younger, I could have like invested time in to listen to, and pros that have been through it. But I'm very happy to have done things wrong and to be able to share it, and hopefully help others make, just avoid the mistakes that I did. But thank you so much. And I hope all's well in your world too.
Thank you. Well, it takes athletes like you willing to share your story. So thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Jess, you can find her on Instagram at JessTun. Next week's episode will be a Q&A with me, where I'll be answering questions that have been submitted to me by listeners. And if you would like to submit a question for that episode, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.